You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. And once again, it is time for your daily dose of recovery, brought to you by David, with spooky music to help set the mood. So, get comfortable. Feel free to rest in peace while we discuss Halloween. Halloween traces its roots back some 2,000 years to the Celtic countries of northwestern Europe. Of course, then it was known as Samhain, or Summer's End, and it divided the agricultural year in two, as it marked the beginning of the dangerous season of darkness and cold weather. The fall harvest had been taken in, and people hoped they had stored away enough supplies to see them through the winter months. This was a very scary time of year, in ways that are often overlooked by us nowadays. It is the time of year when everything around us seems to be dying. Leaves turn brown, yellow, and red. Animals vanish into hibernation. The colorful flowers of spring and summer are gone. As the sun retreats south, the days grow shorter and shorter in length. And prior to the age of electricity, the nights were pitch black in all directions, illuminated only by moonlight and the glow of torches, lanterns, fireplaces, and candles. In today's modern world of electricity, grocery stores, supermarkets, and online orders that deliver right to your doorstep, it can be difficult for us to understand how important this time of year was for people even as recently as 100 years ago. According to folklore, Samhain marked a rift in reality that set both good and bad spirits free to walk amongst us. The ghosts of dead people, as well as creatures from other worlds, were free to venture among us, and these spirits were to blame for the creepy things that happened on Halloween night. People who vanished on Samhain were said to be taken away by the fairies, and by the way, fairies in the ancient Celtic cultures are not the pretty pixies of Disney cartoons. Nor are they the creatures of art and music that inspired Tolkien's imagination. No, the fae of ancient myths are dangerous creatures that emerge from the mist, out of the shadows at crossroads, or from their hidden entrances in hillsides. Since the veil between worlds was weakest on Halloween night, there arose many traditions associated with the holiday that centered around predicting the future, including who you might fall in love with. Romanticized by poets, the love rituals associated with Halloween supposedly allowed young women to divine the identity of their future husbands. And the most elaborate of these rituals was the Dumb Supper. Now, please remember that we are talking about something that occurred in the 1700s and 1800s, people then did not have our modern sense of enlightenment, equality, or sensitivity, so please forgive them, but what they meant by dumb was mute or silent. So, the Dumb Supper was a ritual that had to be conducted in complete silence. Most of the time, these suppers were for women only, but there were occasions when men would also attend. The idea was to prepare a dinner and then serve it backwards in, quote, every respect. According to one account, quote, the tables were set as wrongly as possible, the chairs were turned backwards, the meal was to be served dessert first, end quote. Uttering a single word could break the spell and ruin the magic at work during the supper. When everything was prepared, then at midnight, the spirits of the husbands-to-be would walk through the door or even arrive in person, or so the tradition held. Whether a ghost or a real man showed up, supposedly, whoever sat next to a girl was sure to be her future husband. This was a kind of party game with a bit of supernatural thrill thrown in for fun. There are spookier renditions of this ritual, since the supper could also predict that a girl would end up a spinster or even die. It was said that if a coffin appeared at midnight, that meant that the young woman wouldn't marry at all and was doomed to die alone. I remember being told something similar once by some kids I went to high school with many years ago, so I have great sympathy for any of the young girls who perform these ritual suppers only to have someone prank them with a coffin at midnight. According to some accounts, mothers would tell their daughters to prepare such a supper for Halloween night and then encourage neighborhood boys to burst in on the girls through windows or out of closets, playing a prank on them. But it is easy to understand why young girls from past centuries would be interested in this kind of ritual. After all, they lived in a time when their future depended on whom they married, and discovering the identity of their husband-to-be was powerful motivation. In the 18th and 19th century, many people from Ireland and Scotland immigrated to the United States and brought with them their Halloween superstitions and traditions for pranks and mischief-making. Throughout the 18th century, Halloween night was an occasion for people to spook and scare each other, jumping out from the shadows and carving jack-o'-lanterns that they dangled from the ends of sticks. By the late 19th century, Halloween advanced into a night of anarchy and danger. Many news articles from the 1880s and 1890s describe a trend of increasingly dangerous and destructive Halloween pranks. One story from 1888 reports exploding pipe bombs. Another, from 1891, describes vandalism of home windows being painted black. In 1894, some 200 young boys in Washington, D.C. used bags of flour to attack well-dressed people riding streetcars. Year after year, the scope and size of the pranks increased. Bricks were thrown through shop windows, obscenities painted on homes. Some articles even report children threatening adults with bodily harm if sweets or money were not given to them. Newspapers at the turn of the century report some adults firing guns at pranksters who turned out to be boys between the ages of 11 and 13. The night of mischief had become a night of mayhem. So beginning in the early 20th century, there was an effort to reform the holiday, a rebranding, if you would. Adults moved the holiday celebrations indoors for themselves and older children, while the tradition of trick-or-treating was given over to younger and younger children. But what to have these younger children do? Well, why not rebrand the extortion-type behavior of the older teenagers and turn it into a constructive tradition? Teach children at a young age to politely ask for sweets from their neighbors and urge adults to have treats at the ready. This became the spearhead in reforming Halloween. The first detailed instructions for trick-or-treating appeared in magazines in the 1930s. Radio programs and later TV shows followed, offering further instruction, and by 1952, the Donald Duck cartoon, Trick or Treat, would reach millions of people through movie screens and television, featuring a kid-centric story with a moral for both adults and youths. Quote, "When ghosts and goblins by the score ring the bell on your front door, you better not be stingy or your nightmares will come true." End quote. In 1952, the people making that cartoon were among the first generation of kids to experience the reform of Halloween as a kid-friendly holiday revolving around dressing up in nice costumes and asking in a polite way for free candy. Sadly, though, I think Halloween is once again in need of reforms. Over the last 20 years, the shops where you can buy Halloween costumes have increased their offerings of costumes that are more frightful than fun, while also offering a sexy whatever costume for women. Now, I certainly believe that everyone is free to choose whatever costume they want to wear for Halloween night, But I also know that the health and quality of community events, like holiday traditions, are a reflection of how much we care about our neighbors and fellow human beings. If you are invested in a costume and Halloween activities that lean into the prank and scary side of the holiday, then you tend to ruin the fun for everyone else who wants to have the joy of family trick-or-treating. Besides, many of these costumes that are sexy whatever often result in young girls and grown women feeling body image and self-esteem issues that I don't think we should be peddling in front of anyone. In short, Halloween has become more adult as of late. There is no trick-or-treating in my neighborhood, not for the last 5 years, but there are many adult parties around that include drinking, eating, and drugs. The family-friendly portion of the holiday has been displaced. Now there is trunk-or-treating, where kids go car to car in a parking lot asking for candy, usually at one of the church parking lots. Or there is trick-or-treating at the mall, at least there was when the majority of the stores in the mall were open. Sadly, most of the stores in the malls where I live have closed, either because of people utilizing online shopping, or because of the lockdown and social distancing resulting from the last year and a half. But neither the events at the malls or churches occur on Halloween night. Usually they take place the weekend before the holiday happens, further fragmenting the community's ability to celebrate Halloween together as we once did. Yes, in my opinion, Halloween is in need of effort to make it about kids and safe, spooky fun. The spooky holiday of mischief and costumes marks the start of the holiday season for me. In years past, the holiday season was a very stressful time, and it provoked me to turn to food for comfort because I am an emotional compulsive eater. Getting from Halloween all the way through New Year's Day, to me, was like running a gauntlet. Year after year, the holidays were a time of stress and sadness. My emotional overeating resulted in me putting on more and more weight, which in turn made me more isolated and excluded from holiday events. I didn't have the energy to decorate my home, participate in holiday traditions, and I was very resentful of all the shopping and preparing of food that is required for the holidays in general. Halloween was one of my favorite times of the year when I was a kid, but as an adult, this holiday came to torture me because it reminded me each year that I could no longer participate. Halloween meant a lot to me as a kid. It was a time for my brother and I to work together and have fun. My brother and I would decorate the front of our house and yard with elaborate decorations. We became quite well known for it in the neighborhood. Then we would dress up in costumes, scare the trick-or-treaters, and get into trouble with our mom for our mischievous fun. But as I became more and more obese, I no longer fit into costumes that could be bought at the store, and eventually, I even became so big that making my own costume at home was not a possibility. This year, however, is different. This year, I have lost so much weight that once again, I fit into my pirate outfit that I used to wear when I went to the Renaissance Fair. I actually found a photograph of me from the last time I could wear the costume. The picture was taken in 2011 for Halloween night. That's right. I haven't been able to wear this costume for 10 years, and right now, I'm about 100 pounds lighter than I was in that photo from 2011, so the costume fits nice and loose, and folks, I look good. The progress that I have made over these past 2 years, the biggest chunk of which was achieved during my year of abstinence and program, means that this year, I am reclaiming one of my favorite holidays, and I know that next year I will be even lighter, which means I will be able to do more for Halloween and all the holidays. When I reach my healthy goal weight and I am no longer overweight, I will be able to buy any costume that I want. Y'all, I'm going to go looking for costumes and try to find masquerade balls and costume parties to go to. Seriously, what's the point of being a responsible adult if you don't get to play dress up now and then? I mean it, we need more costume parties in life. But that's for the future, and it's fun to think about and draw hope from, but let's get back to talking about Halloween. As I said, when I was a kid, I loved Halloween. Getting to dress up in costumes and go trick-or-treating to collect lots of free candy? What's not to like? But now I'm in OA, and this year will be my second Halloween while in recovery. So what does an OA Halloween look like? Obviously, it means not having tons of candy or junk food at a party. No drinking at the party either, since many people in OA are also in the beverage club and we want to respect our friends in AA. But there is so much more to Halloween than the candy and the food and the drinking. I would go one step further and say that that applies to all the holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve, 4th of July, Valentine's Day, heck, even St. Patrick's Day. All the holidays are wrapped up in food and drinking to one extent or another, but they don't have to be dominated by those traditions. Not if we choose to enjoy the holidays with serenity and food neutrality in our minds. The first thing that comes to mind is that everyone should enjoy dressing up in costumes for Halloween. This is a night of the year when you can be anything and anyone. Do you want to be your favorite character from a book or a movie? A superhero that flies in the sky? An astronaut that blasts into outer space with a lightsaber at your side? Why not? Your imagination can take you anywhere you want to go with your costume. For this night of the year, you have the permission of the world to be creative and playful. And if anyone is so foolish as to judge you and try to make you feel bad about your costume, well, just remember that that's their problem. That's their sickness and character defect, not yours. And there is so much freedom of emotion and self-esteem to be found in embracing that healthy boundary. More than that, I think that the best costumes for Halloween are the ones that you make yourself, with your own work and creativity, not the ones that you buy in a store, though you can certainly use the store costumes as a starting template to work off of. Halloween costumes should be an opportunity for positive body image and creative fun. One of my friends in OA, who is represented by the fish in the bowl on the cover art for HP3R, is from Mexico. And when I was discussing my ideas for this episode with her, she wrote the following that I'd like to share with all of you. She wrote, quote, "There's a large tradition here in Mexico surrounding those days of the year. I was a bit upset on my first year of abstinence because I couldn't eat a lot of the traditional food that I liked. However, as time passed, I started to focus more and more on making awesome costumes and attending the many parades or public events available. I also participated in a few contests, so it all became more about crafting and making a great costume, and eventually, I couldn't care less about the food." End quote. I am so proud of my friend for the progress that she has made, and I am working towards that kind of an approach to Halloween. Like I said, this year I have reclaimed my ability to wear costumes. Next year, I am sure I will have even more variety of options to choose from. But I also hope that the social distancing restrictions will be gone, and I can plan to hold a party for Halloween. One that focuses on games and karaoke music, on costumes and fun, without needing food or alcohol to drink. I'll pull that smoke generator machine out of my closet and dust it off. I'll hang up fake cobwebs and string even more lights than I did this year. that inflatable 5-foot-tall ghost who is friendly that I have decorating my home this year will greet my guests and invite them in for laughter, friendship, and fun. I thought I'd wrap this episode up with some interesting quotes that I think are relevant to Halloween. Some of these are by some pretty spooky people, like Edgar Allan Poe, who said of Halloween, quote, "Believe nothing you hear, only half of what you see," end quote. Stephen King wrote, "We make up horrors to help us cope with the real ones." Ain't that the truth? Dexter Cozen wrote, "Shadows of a thousand years arise again unseen. Voices whisper in the trees. Tonight is Halloween." Oh, that's so beautifully creepy. This one is kind of funny. Quote, "Halloween is the only time I can easily convince others that my children are monsters," end quote. I have no idea who said that one, but it makes me smile and hope for a future where I'm a father and can say the same about my kids on Halloween night. Mason Cooley said, quote, "Clothes make a statement. Costumes tell a story," end quote. Oh, that's very true, and something we should all aspire towards when we are making our costumes. I like this one, too. "Ghosts and goblins come to play on Halloween's final day." That one's by Rusty Fischer. How about this one? "The universe is full of magical things, patiently waiting for our wits to grow sharper," so said Eden Philpotts. I have to say, not having the constant fog in my mind caused by overeating has definitely sharpened my wits. I wonder if I'll see anything magical on some distant Halloween night. Lastly, I want to quote a very wise rabbit that I know, who said this of Halloween. "Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me none of that nasty candy to eat. Hooray for abstinence!" Well said, Rabbit. Well said. This year will be my second Halloween with me eating absolutely no candy, which still feels kind of weird, but you know what feels amazing? Being halfway to my goal weight and fitting into Halloween costumes again. Every year, Halloween would come and punish me because I felt so ashamed and angry at myself for not being able to participate, and I would promise myself that next year would be different. You know what? Last year was different, and this year is going to be even more different. And next year, I'm going to be even closer to my goal weight. Who knows? Maybe I'll even be able to buy a costume from a store for the first time since I was 10 years old. Give me that. Give me that experience, going into a costume store and knowing that there are many costumes there that I fit in. That's what I want, not the candy. So Rabbit is right. Give me none of that nasty candy to eat. Happy Halloween, everyone.
You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to tune in on Mondays for episodes of Recovery Buddies with David, and check back on Thursdays for future episodes of Daily Dose of Recovery, here on HP3R.